Let's see here. Marty from Maltby writes, "Dear Norm, can you tell us about the poster Bananas and Blondes from Hardcore Husky?" Well, Marty, speaking of Bananas and Blondes, you know, the first time I met Bananas and Blondes, he was underneath the Queensboro Bridge. At the time, he was jerking off punks at $15 a man. Now, you might think that's horrible and salacious, but I do not judge the man, you know. A man needs to earn a living, and bacon ain't cheap.
Another one. All right, we the best. I'm out.
With Hitler, the more I learn about that guy, the more I don't care for him.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
The weather is perfect, the field is fast at the Rose Bowl for tonight's ball game.
Well, it's a bright, sunny, warm Sunday morning. I've got my bottle of Perrier and a smile on my face as the Flawless Huskies knocked off the Utah Utes 35-28 yesterday at Husky Stadium. I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Joey Dangerous Lee and Willie Duke. Gentlemen, how are you doing on this wonderful morning? We got lots of great positive things to talk about.
Great. I'm positive, yeah.
We've never been better.
We're 10-0, and we're ready.
To anybody listening to this that doesn't know exactly what I'm getting at, that's right. It's that, you know, we have, maybe it's because we're jaded from several years of, you know, mismanagement with the program or whatever, I don't know, but for whatever combination of reasons, sometimes we start to trend negative a little bit when we begin our podcast. So we made a conscious decision to start the first portion of today's podcast with a smile on our face and just looking at everything positive. And, you know, we're not going to bring up things like the guy dropping the ball on the 2-yard line before he ran into the end zone, or the blocked field goal, or the 238 yards passing in the first half by the pig farmer. So we're going to focus on the positives. So, Willie Duke, do you want to take it away? Big win. Huskies are 10-0. And that is amazing.
Yeah.
And it really is. I'm being serious there. That's amazing.
No, it is. And this is a conference that is not, it's not what it used to be. I mean, there's years where long stretches of time when you were like, the conference is like USC and maybe Cal and the rest of the teams, the conference is pretty garbage, or it was Oregon and Stanford and everyone else was kind of garbage. Like, it's a tough damn conference. You know, a lot of the crappier teams would be winning a lot more games most years. And, you know, the good teams could easily, you know, win the conference. It's and the team that, you know, we all thought was going to be completely one dimensional finds ways to win games in different ways. And it's good as the offense did last week to, you know, put up their points. I mean, it was really on the defense, and barring the play that shall not be referred to again, you know, the defense basically gave them a 12-point win. So it was weird. It was the worst defense I've ever seen in Husky Stadium, given the opponent, followed by just the best defense we've seen this team play. So it's interesting. I don't know what else to say, but because I'm struggling to keep it positive.
Well, they dominated Michigan State. Not to get too anal about it, but they played really well against Michigan State. But
they dominated Cal.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they dominated,
yeah, they
Cal.
Dominated Cal.
I mean, my thing with that against a lot of these 4-6 win teams that don't have great quarterbacks is if you can sack them early or pick them off early and stuff like that, it really makes a difference. And the Husky defense historically is terrible at doing that. They're great at giving guys the confidence to get the momentum going. And yeah, Cal and Michigan State, they kind of took the quarterback down early, and that was a big difference. So I would love to see that against someone else sometime in my lifetime.
I hope you're not battling some sort of affliction, are you? Or
What do you mean?
Well, you said by the end of your lifetime or within your lifetime.
Oh, no, I was just referring to how
breaking news on the podcast.
How jaded I am about, you know, having these quarterbacks that are very good that they let, not only they let do well, they let them get hot early, or they give them confidence early. They don't really earn. But yeah, that said, I thought Utah, you know, as Utah was greased up, you know, not just to continue.
I don't know why it's not,
my mindset of this was their Super Bowl and not the Oregon game, which they was probably more important to them. They had this game. They clearly had some shit dialed up offensively. I think their game plan was to make Washington think they were going to run, like that's the thing, and then they came out passing every play for a while, and they knew where to go, and it worked. But once they were kind of out of tricks, it was as a whole team, they really didn't have too much left. So yeah, it was a good win.
I will say this, and then Joey, we'll hear from you. But the first play, Utah's first play from scrimmage, Washington's first play from scrimmage. Yesterday, as if I recall right, it was a Dylan Johnson toss sweep right, and the outside backer came flying in and blasted him. And I was looking at my phone waiting for the inevitable text from Wooly Doug about sign stealing, but it never came. So
I
was it going through your head?
No, I their defense is pretty good, and they're pretty well coached. They always got a good defense, and their defense never seems like ASU in 2017 and last year, where it was like, it looks like they just know where the play is going. I think they're pretty good, but it was a good matchup, I think, for Washington, and good job on the tackle, because like Utah's thing is their ends get really good pressure, but you know, Rosengarten and Fautanu, they're not going to give up that much pressure. So that's a good thing to have. And Utah's interior D front is more about like stopping the run. They're not like Oregon's, which is more like long and kind of like claps the pocket. So, good execution on a lot of fronts for the team, even if it wasn't kind of ugly game for a good chunk of it.
And two huge shout outs, and Joey, I'll get your response to this. Dylan Johnson is a man among boys. I love that guy. I think everybody does. And it also, Trice isn't getting the numbers that we'd like, but especially in recent weeks, he's just giving his all on every play, it seems, and so that's heartening.
Oh, yeah. So Braylon Trice, he's going to be part of our positive segments, and then he'll be part of our negative segments, right?
negative. Do we go to a commercial break before we transfer to the negative, or is there
I don't know.
We'll need to ring a bell, or
so we had a repo
commercial.
I'm loving Dylan Johnson. Yeah, I think they've found a like a real good number one running back. He looks the part, and I think Tybo Rogers is slowly coming into the number two role. By his athleticism and stuff. I only wish he could have made that catch. It was a little behind him, and he dropped it. You know, that would have been nice to see what he.
I don't want to hear it. La, 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 la.
I know. Well, I wanted to see what he could do in the. I wanted to see what he could do in the open field.
Yeah,
because I think people would have been like, really pumped up to see what Tybo could have done in the open field there. But anyways, so we we rode down, we took three of my friends down on the bus with us yesterday. And we get down there and we meet up with, and C. Fetter's Nacho Lover is kind of waiting there. He got a ride from a cop friend of his. So he'd already been drinking and he got a ride from a cop to the game. So he's already waiting there where we parked the bus. So he hangs out with us the whole pregame. And it's kind of funny. My buddy Michael said, "Oh, you're C. Fetter's Nacho Lover. Thanks, Taft." So that was pretty funny. The whole game, I never felt like the Huskies weren't going to win. I kept looking over at Wooly Dude, and I was saying, a shootout with fucking Utah. That's what we're getting today. Like, a shootout with Utah. But I never felt like down, and I never felt down.
Really?
I've been saying all year, I never felt like they were going to lose the game. I felt like I was mad, and I kept saying this is embarrassing what we're doing in the first half, but I never felt like they were going to lose the game. Never.
Willie, I'll edit this out if you want, if I'm divulging something private, but you did text late in the second quarter that you wanted to go home.
Joey does not speak for me, but I will say I think there is two elements that did help. One of, like, I think Utah is a decent team. This wasn't ASU or Stanford where I'm like, what on earth is going on here? It was more of just the format where I'm like, you're like, if you tell me Washington scores 24 in the first half, I'm like, great, we're up by at least 10 points. It was the format of how it was happening was just traumatizing. And, you know, you're there, or you can really tell. I mean, like, those Utah skill position players are typical Utah guys. That's like, as we were talking about a Friday, like Samson Nakua, where you're just like, what the fuck? Like, how is this guy making plays? Like, he's going to finish the year with 89 yards. He's going to finish the year with 180 yards receiving, and 170 of them are going to be in Washington for some reason. But no, looking back, I did have a little bit of like, once the offense got going and you could see the teams, it was like, I have a hard time picturing Utah winning it. Actually, the only time I really could see them winning it was, the most part, was when they got the ball back down by 7. And I'm like, if they break a play and they get down, they're going to go for 2. It's going to come down to a 2-point conversion to win or lose. But yeah, no, I might be looking at it, you know, after you get the win and all is good, but I don't know. It was more of the format where I was just like, God, are we really, even if they would have won like a 3-point game that comes down to the final play, more so than it really did, I would have been like, and it was a true shootout like last week against USC. It's like, what the fuck? Like, God, if the offense is going against Utah's defense, the defense needs to find a way to make this not a 52-49 game. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that was my I'm going to leave a thought.
Well, the Peg Farmer was, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but at halftime it was something like 18 of 23 for 238 yards and 2 TDs. And I know those last two numbers are accurate. I don't remember the exact completions against attempts, but it was around 18 for 23 or something like that. It was ridiculous. And the thing that the three of us have joked about for a long time is you get these kind of either, you know, try hard quarterbacks or the third string walk on, and those are the ones that are going to torch us. And this guy, you know, he'd drop back, he'd have some pressure, he'd wrangle out of it. And then he just, it looks like it sounds like I'm putting him down. He's a decent quarterback, but he's nothing special. And he just looked like he ran a 5.5 40 or something, and yet he's breaking tackles and juking. And then, you know, the next thing you know, we're in his backfield, and then next thing you know, he gained 7 or something. And it was like, ah, you know, and so I was, So that's where I was worried, like, oh, my God, just like you were saying a second ago, it's like, you know, is it going to end up being a 45-42 game or whatever? By the time we got to the fourth quarter, by no means was I relaxed and thinking that it was in the bag, but I felt like something – it would have to be like a bridge collapse type of catastrophe for us to lose the game. Not out of the question with our defense, but I felt reasonably comfortable in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I don't think they ever stacked him, and it was a typical thing too, where it's like he was doing well, but he also had, I think, in the first half alone, he had 3 to 4 passes that could have and should have been intercepted. He was having a, like, there was one early which I was like, well, we're in for it, where he threw into double coverage at the goal line with like Nunley and maybe Powell or there or Hampton, and you're like, you got to pick that, like. And they knocked it. They didn't. They made it incomplete, but it was like shit. Like it's not gonna happen today. Yeah. I mean, he had this stupid thing too, where he like hunches himself down or some shit, and then runs into the middle so you can't see him, and then he like kind of runs out. Which was like, fine, fuck. I don't want to play these fucking guys anymore. Like, I don't know if the Big Ten has these guys, but I'm just sick of it. I don't want to play those guys anymore.
Yeah, a year from now, you'll be complaining about Purdue. But
well, I was hoping we were looking in the West. There was going to be, like, a West division because, like, I feel like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa are, like, legally required to have, like, a 6'4", 185 white guy who can't fucking move in, like, the Husky defense. That's the only guy the Husky defense, like, eats alive, but unfortunately, they're not, like, I feel like they don't play those teams at all.
Well, I don't know. You could throw out all the old rules, though, when it comes to DeBoer. I mean, it's the most amazing 10-0 team I've ever seen, because 10-0, I mean,
it's 10-0. It is awesome.
It's 10-0, and it's like only the second time in the entire history of Husky football going back to 1889 that they've been 10-0. And the only other time being the 91 Husky national champs. And yet it's very rarely a 51-3 cruise to victory type of thing. It's a tightrope, you know. But you can't really compare it to the 2000 Rose Bowl team that went 11-1 with all those come from behind wins that where they barely eked it out. That was a whole different thing where the entire team would be just in a giant slog, and then they would come alive halfway through the third quarter or whatever, over and over and over. And this year's team is just, you almost can't put a label on them.
Yeah.
Well, and they keep winning.
When we got back, by the way, I left out that we had an extra ticket, so C. Fetter's Nacho Lover ended up sitting with us the whole game, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So he sat next to me, and we were both you know, whenever the Huskies made a good play, we were both duking out pretty hard. So it wasn't like. Yeah, we were negative the whole time. I mean, we're pretty stoked the whole, you know. And I think after the game we mentioned, you know, like 10-0, fucking 10-0. This is awesome. This feels good, you know. I think it feels good to be 10-0, and you still need to focus on, you know, some negative things to clean up, you know, on your football team. Feels like we fucking made it, you know.
That's what this feels,
huh?
I said, to use a Stark term, every Monday it was, we got things to clean up.
Yeah, I know. Sark. Well, I thought we battled. battled was always a term, you know, use an adjective to use. I mean, it's 10-0. It feels good. It was what me and my friends, when we got back and parked our bus, we just kept hugging each other, like 10-0. Like we were like high-fiving, like, you know, this is awesome.
because everything was, you know, everything you could potentially get worried about with, like, you know, you can go through these patterns of, hey, we were 9-0 and we lost to USC in 2016, and, you know, that was a home game, and they came in all, you know, they came in all greased up.
And I was there for that one.
Well, we've only lost to Utah twice, you know, which I kept saying over and over in my head. I didn't mention it until after the game was over. There was no time left on the clock, but I mentioned it to C. Fetter's Nacho Lover. And
you didn't want to be responsible.
I said, you know, huh?
You didn't want to be responsible for any catastrophe.
I didn't. And I had to catch myself a few minutes ago because I don't want to say what I've been saying off the air, you know, multiple times with people I know. But so the Huskies have only lost to Utah twice since they joined the conference. Maybe in history. I can't remember. I don't think they lost them until they joined the conference. Anyways,
I want to say they played them in 1950, and I think there was like a 6-6 tie. I'm doing that totally from memory, but. And then other than
well,
that,
since
it was
they joined,
79.
Since they joined, 2015, they lose to them at home. That was, you know, 7-6 Heart of Dallas Bowl year. And then
our favorite.
2019, they lose to them at home. Yeah, like Willie Duke mentioned, you know, Tyler Huntley to Samson Nakua all game long, which just annoying the shit out of us. So you got 4 years apart, and now Utah comes in 2023, another 4 years, and it's a home game. And I sat there saying in my head, I go, don't make this some weird pattern. Please don't make this some weird pattern. And only I notice, you know, so, yeah, we broke that little streaky pattern or whatever of Utah games. So that was good.
Yeah.
Well, I think a big part of why, when I think about it, of we're kind of like, we come off and seem like negative, it's a different position to be where we are this year, which is what I talked going into the year, and I was worried about the team of like the mental aspect of being favored in every single game you play, which has been the case. I mean, if this was last year, this time last year, especially like it was before the Oregon game, we'd be pretty happy with the win, with a 7-point win over Utah that really felt like it wasn't that as close as 7 points. It felt more like a 17-point win, which it could have easily been, and it couldn't have easily really gone the other way. And I know that sounds super homerish, but like, there's not really a non-fluky outcome where Utah would have won by 7 points. They could have won by like one, but like the Huskies easily, I know this is, you know, you always say about your team, but like easily could have won that game by like 20 points.
Oh, for God's sake.
You really don't think that? Well, one, if a guy doesn't drop the ball.
Is it
possible
yet? Easily, though?
The guy dropped the ball at the 1 yard line, and then when they were going in for like the final score, they were clearly playing to like run the clock out. Like that's like, and they ended up with 0 points on that drive. And then before halftime, they had a, not to go negative, but they had a fucking bonkers ineligible man downfield call on the tight end that probably took at least 3 points off the board. I mean, that's
very true.
Right there,
that's true.
Right there, if you had 8. You go 8 points with that terrible call, most likely, possibly 7, and then the dropped fumble at the 1 yard line. They left a lot of points on the board, and I mean, then you have the field goal debacle when they kind of really played for a field goal. I didn't play for a field goal, but they couldn't get punching in at that final part. No, I think what I'm trying to say, my original point is like, last year, we would have been pretty stoked with this win over a ranked Utah team. And in most years, you would be like, yeah, we won by 7 against ranked Utah. But it's different now. And that's why it's hard not to be negative, is like the expectations are so high. Like, all these games for the most part. So the
defense, regardless of the year or expectations, the defense at times gives such heartburn that it wouldn't matter what year it is. We'd all be scratching our heads and wondering. But I do want to add to your point, though, to argue in your favor on one thing. If we don't drop the ball at the one and return, make that a pick six, and now we're up 40-28 instead of 33-28, and then 35-28 after the safety. If it's 40-28 at that point with their offense not being very good and us with all the noise and momentum, I felt like we had the goods there to end up winning maybe 47-28 or something like that, 47-34. I thought it was a chance for us to blow it out.
That momentum shift was huge, and that shitty quarterback was going to have to go back out there again with the fucking in the student section end zone. And you can kind of tell sometimes when, like, the crowd and stuff like that gets the guys more than others. He wasn't like Ken Dorsey in 2000, but he also wasn't like watching, like, Bo Nix or the dreaded Trent Borke. Like, it didn't really seem to be affecting these guys that much. But, like, when things got tight and loud, he was throwing up random shit. So he easily could have been
up there.
And
with the seventh pick of the 2024 NFL draft, the Denver Broncos select Trenton Borke, Arizona State.
I mean, he seemed unfazed. So, yeah, no, I mean, I being a little bit of a doog, but, yeah, I think that mindset, which goes to the fans, I don't know if it goes to the players or coaches, of like, you know, the expectations are really high.
Yeah.
Again, back to what they used to be. It was good energy at the game too, of like, once the defense started getting stopped, they just had a different feel. And before they came out for the final Utah drive after that blocked field goal, and you're like, Jesus fucking Christ, like, God, all you had to do was get like one more first down and the game is completely over, or make the kick and the game is over. how are we still playing? But the defense, like, they were greased up and they were having fun, and they looked like they were confident a few times in the game. It looked like some of the D players, like, before they came on the field, were like, you know, staring down Utah's sideline and stuff like that, which, you know, it felt different. Like, maybe they were giving them some mentality to be like, hey, you guys need to act like who you are. So I like that. The energy felt pretty good, even though they were in a terrible spot. And, you know, again, you know, it seems like whenever the defense steps up, the offense can't kind of fall back. It's just like another game like that. So I, you know, that was good to see. And, you know, the Trice thing, thus you haven't had like a Terrell Suggs. They've had good defensive ends, and, you know, but they've never had like a first team All-American D end or something. But like, I've never seen a guy who gets back there every play, and I've also never seen a guy who gets fucking held like every single play. And I'm not going negative, I'm just saying that's how good he seems to be. And he's there every play, like, and he's just not getting much help. And they play a lot of mobile quarterbacks, and that's really hard when you don't have D tackles collapsed in the pocket or another D end. But he's there every play, and his motor is great. So if I was an NFL GM, I feel like the floor is pretty low on him, just because that motor is just like, he's got a try hard motor, but he's not a try hard player.
Well, is this where we take a break for our sponsor, Repo, 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 and then come back to talk negative? Or
Well, no.
Joey, are you ready?
I got some more positives. When we after the game, we got back to our bus, our little hangout, and Lau Kuhn and 89U were waiting there. They happened to be walking back, you know, they were going to walk back through E1 to go, you know, meet up with their ride or whatever. And so they hung out, for quite a while. We were just hanging out, you know, we're all high-fiving white guys, 10-0. And yeah, I mean, 89 Utes, you know, well, Lacoon and 89 Utes and Steve Petters, all, like, super nice, great
oh, yeah.
guys, cool guys to hang with. So, yeah, 89 Ute, I actually felt for one time, I felt a little bad that we're not going to play Utah, you know,
mm-hmm.
anymore. Because their fans weren't like, I mean, they were annoying. I had this, you know, Real Housewives of Salt Lake chick behind me that was, like, really annoying and had like, doing color commentary on the game, basically, the whole time.
Did she dress in leopard skin?
No, it wouldn't surprise if it was a September game, probably. But since it was you know, kind of, it was chilly and windy, you know, a little rainy and stuff. But I mean, they were annoying. They were kind of making little dorky comments that they thought were funny that weren't really funny, and it was pretty irritating. But none of their fans are like obnoxious. They're not
no.
in your face. They're not in your face. They're not assholes, you know, and they just, you know, they were like, no, you didn't get booed. It was, I didn't
moon.
Feel like, oh, mooned. Yeah. Oh yeah. Mooned. Right. Yeah.
You got mooned earlier.
I think it flipped off. It wasn't, you know, whenever they scored, it wasn't like Oregon fans. They were acting like they were taking an arrow out of the quiver and shooting at Husky fans, you know, you know, like Penix does. There was just a better vibe. And I actually felt like after the game, you know, me and Laocoon were talking outside of the bus, and we, you know, at one point he said, where did 89 you go? I mean, he mentioned him by name, but I'll just say 89U. He goes, where did 89U go? I go, I don't know. He must be in the bus. So then I went and looked in the bus, and he's chatting it up with Wooly Duke's dad and his and Wooly Duke's uncle and our friend that's our friend that's a local fire chief. The four of them are just sitting on the bus, and they're just yucking it up like, you know, like a bunch of old time, you know, football fans or whatever, and getting along great. So yeah, I was like, you know, I'm kind of like, now I kind of feel bummed out we won't play Utah, because I feel like the Huskies, you know, the Huskies kind of own Utah since they came to the conference. What are they, like 9-2 against them, or 10-2, or 8?
Oh,
like
I think
that?
It's like 14-2, 14-2-1, or something like that.
I mean, well, then maybe that's all time. But, yeah, since joining the conference, like,
yeah.
They've never really had an issue with Utah. So, yeah, I was kind of like, ah, man.
But
you know,
89
Utah is
such a nice guy.
I don't want to play Cal. I don't want to play Stanford. I don't want to play the Arizona school anymore. Well, maybe Arizona. We don't really have any problems with Arizona lately. But, you know. Yeah, it's like, kind of bummed out, you know, not to play, you know, Utah. I wonder if I would have had that feeling with Colorado since, you know, haven't had a really too many problems with Colorado since they joined, but, yeah.
Well, I mean,
but
I know
anyways,
you guys disagree, but I'm going to miss ASU, you know?
Mm.
I know you guys absolutely don't feel that way.
I would miss ASU if the games didn't always turn out the way they do. I've kind of always liked their program. They've kind of had players that I've liked, but
yeah.
It's just the fact that for 20 plus years now that they play them terribly. Yeah. I mean, Utah kind of felt to me like a Boise State, like a Boise State,
yeah.
Like, and their fans were pretty hardy. They were like kind of haggard, like white people. They were
mountain people.
Yeah, they were very, like, doogie, like, they were, like Boise State, same thing, were, like, every play, they're, like, really celebrating, like, five-yard runs and stuff.
Right.
Maybe we're the same way, but, yeah, like, the Oregon fans,
don't do anything until they're 99% sure they're going to win, and then they start to get annoying, like, because they're so fragile. But yeah, no, they were cool, and it was kind of like try hard, chip on your shoulder. Not as good team, not as talented teams. A lot of times, like Utah and the Coug and the Beavers, the Huskies play them pretty well. So when you combine like a little bit of like raw talent and try hard, like greased up, but like ASU becomes the problem, or like a Cal or something. So yeah, it's I don't know if I'd say I miss Utah, but I'm sure Iowa will replace them very well.
Well, they
well, you had
like
an interesting combination there, comparing them to Boise. Because, like, you could say that Utah is a rich man's Boise, or Boise is a poor man's Utah. And I think that's a really apt comparison you make.
Well,
yeah, their fans
were
very similar.
They felt like Nebraska fans with extra wives.
that works too.
They weren't like clapping off, you know, Washington fans, but you know, the Utah fans came over to where, I mean, a gripe we have is our seats are like right in the fucking middle of like a, you know, visitors. It's just that kind of sucks.
Wow.
But well, it's long story, but yeah.
Okay.
So Utah players come, you know, right. You know, we're right by the visiting tunnel. So Utah players come and, you know, stand by the fence and wave, and, you know, they clap or whatever. They're saying their whatever. They, you know, most visiting teams, they just run right back into the tunnel. But the Utah players, they actually stop and they, you know, take time to thank their visiting fans that have come to support them. So I thought that was kind of cool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even after a loss, you know, they still stopped and, you know, thanked them and whatever, sang their song or whatever. So I thought that was kind of cool.
So do you want to list anything negative? And it looks like we've got a ton of questions. I posted thing at like 7:30 this morning, and there's like, the last I looked, there was like 41 replies already. So
the refs suck. I'm so fucking sick of this conference.
Yeah.
It's just fucking, you know, the fact that we're 10-0 and we're winning and we still have to talk about that bullshit, it pisses me off. This fucking conference just can't let, you know, fan bases be happy ever. I mean, they're fucking taking over a fucking game.
We would say this. I know I would, and I'm 99% sure you guys would too. Even if the calls were going in our favor, I would still go, this is not right. Call the game the way it's supposed to be called. And weird bullshit where they seem to almost like they want to insert themselves into the outcome or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, look at the combined penalties. It was like 20 or 21 or something like that, right? So think about it. Okay, does Kalen DeBoer sound like a guy, you know, who doesn't care about penalties? Does he strike you as a guy who, you know, doesn't care about penalties? No, he's not like a super like aggressive.
Like Kip Kelly openly didn't care about penalties when he was at Oregon back in the day. He was like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think Jim Mora did either. Jim Mora always said, you know, there's no correlation between, you know, low amounts or high amounts of penalties. It was all, he would say it was all explosive plays. Was explosive plays and turnover rate. But still, there's coaches out there who just will not tolerate penalties. You know, I mean, locally you can think of Peterson and Mike Holmgren, just hated it, you know, penalties. You know, it was always publicly. But so does Kyle Whittingham strike you as a guy who doesn't give a shit about penalties?
No.
He doesn't to me. He seems like a real disciplined guy, you know, and technique. And Utah always plays hard and is all about technique. But they were mugging our receivers big time. But yes. I feel like that would have stopped if they'd have thrown one fucking flag in the first quarter or two flags really made an emphasis on holding. That would have stopped. But still, Whittingham doesn't strike me as a guy who doesn't give a shit about penalties. So why is it like the most penalized game of the fucking year on both sides of the field? Like they are taking over a game. At one point I yelled because there was a penalty on Washington, and then I think there was a penalty on Utah, like on back-to-back plays, and I was just like, let us play some football, please. I just want to play football.
Yes.
I mean, it's just as irritating to hell.
Do we want to mention it? Oh, go ahead.
No, there was on both sides because it was like there's some calls that I noticed against USC last week. I noted, like, if I was a USC fan, I would have pissed. There were some ones on Utah. There was, like, an offensive pass interference on their tight end that was, like, what? But I think – to me, this year especially, I don't know what it is. They just got to, at least watching the Huskies, they need to do something with holding and, like, pass interference. Where, like, remember the Apple Cup where they called pass interference against the Huskies, like, five times in a row? Because they were, like, and you were, like, it was pass interference. And, like, as Joey was saying, like, that'll change the way they defend. And, like, they need to do that. Like, that needs to happen because, like, that was bad last. They were just all over the receivers. And the same thing with holding, I guess, both ways, too, of, like, call holding or don't call holding, this, like, weird thing where they will finally throw the flag if it's, like, completely obvious against, like, a guy. I just don't think it works. You need to establish something. Then, I mean, I watched Oregon and USC most of the game, and it was fucking terrible in that game both ways. Like, just huge fucking penalties that, like, alter the game, mostly for against USC. But Oregon had some that hurt them too. And then the pinnacle was Oregon's tight end, who recovered from an injury in Husky Stadium, like, caught a touchdown and not even aggressively. He just kind of, like, spun the ball when he got a flag for, like, excessive celebration. It's like, that is the worst. That's as bad as the Jake Locker, like, spiking the football penalty of, like, what? You're flagging the guy for, like a medium level of, like, spinning the fucking ball after a touchdown. Just, like, what? God, that game the officiating was just, it's not even just so much how bad it is, too. It's just so constant. We're, like, every play,
you're just
looking to see if there's a flag. And you're, like, especially late on the fourth down. I haven't rewatched it, but the Huskies had, like, a 4th-and-4 they converted in deep in Utah territory, and you're like, you're celebrating.
It seems like
the game's over, and then you just look, and you're like, there's a fucking flag. There's a fucking holding call. And you're like, did this ever stop? And then I think the very next play they had an offense, there was a holding call again. It just never stops.
And the thing is that was it Fautino or
Fautino?
I think because they were showing. Say it again.
Fautanu.
I always have a problem with that. If I'm remembering correctly, they showed a slowed down replay of it, and it looked like he held. But at the same time, I was yelling at the TV, like, that's happening to Trice every play.
Yeah. I mean.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the blatant, huge blatant thing. So, that particular one. I don't want to get so caught in the weeds on one play.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter. But you convert the fourth down. If you're going to alter the game that much, make sure you're getting your money's worth and it's legit, you know? That's all. And it's easy to sit and criticize when it's not in the heat of battle, but when we're not, you know, we don't have the striped shirts on and we're out there. It's just, it doesn't have to be this hard. And you know, the people they have out there, I'm sorry, I'll say it again. There was two calls by that female line judge that never mind.
Yeah, do you want me to bash the The chick? I'll bash the chick.
Go ahead.
Jesus, man. Just come on. Is there? Hey, I'll say it. Isn't there? You know, FCS officials that fucking worked their ass off. You know, me and Wooly Duke's dad were talking about this on the way home. Like, there's probably a guy that's officiating, you know, Big Sky games that wants to get up to the FBS level that got lapped by this fucking chick just for inclusion and equality bullshit purposes, you know?
Yes.
I mean,
and we know nothing about her personally, but if you go look, I'm sorry to say this to interrupt you, but really quickly, if you go look at her resume, though, I bet $500, it's not impressive, and she leaped over people, and they made room for her.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that, well, there's just inconsistencies. Like, it seems like she'll throw flags on these ticky-tack plays, and then there's guys getting mugged. You know, Colt gets tackled, Odunzi's getting held, or it's just frustrating. And wasn't she the one that threw the flag on the ineligible man downfield?
Yep.
Late. She was the one that did that one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the picture, and it almost looks like, I mean, Polk is lined up a yard off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And Quentin Moore is lined up, he's lined up next to Rosengarten, and he's lined up even with him. So I mean, that was a bad call. A really bad call that didn't need to be made. It just a terrible fucking call.
And it's just a sad state of affairs that you can't aim to have the best referees out there as opposed to fulfilling some sort of ideological hell-bent agenda, you know. So there's our 35 seconds of Tug Tavern content for you guys. But anyways, the Huskies emerged victorious. They were 10-0.
The celebration at the end of the game, you know, they get the interception, they're celebrating, they get a penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. That was one of the loudest boos I've heard in Husky Stadium forever. Because it was like, the game is over.
I know.
This call has to be made.
here, I agree with you in principle, but the refs aren't at fault there because that is what they're supposed to call when you're going to that extent.
That was fair. Yeah.
I mean, it felt like when the flags came out, the Huskies players were already kind of wrapping up and, you know, leaving.
True.
They were kind of dancing their way back to the sideline. I mean, I felt like if you give them like another second or two, they're leaving and it's no big deal. They're not, you know,
they weren't taunting Utah's sideline, but
yeah, we're not in Salt Lake City where they're taunting, you know, the whole visiting crowd or whatever.
They were mimicking Vikings or whatever.
But see, the booing comes because it's that penalty on top of all the other just ticky-tack bullshit penalties that are occurring throughout the game. And Trice not getting the calls until the fourth quarter, which everybody seems to have agreed upon. We're not calling holding on until the fourth quarter. So,
To me, it was kind of feeling like we're getting hit with all these penalties, and Utah too, because I I feel like Utah got screwed a few times also. So it was just bad.
I think they had 10 penalties.
Penalties. But to me, Maybe I'm just saying the exact same thing you just said, but a little bit differently. But it's like we've had to slog through all these penalties in this hard-fought game, and then you finally get that release where it's like we won the game and this big play capped it, and then here comes the flag. You know, we can't even enjoy the moment. But again, I want to say the refs themselves did the right thing in that moment. It's just that the rules a little bit – the main thing is, are you showing up your opponent?
You know, now, here's an interesting thing. In, was it in Japan, I think it is, in Japanese baseball, I think I have it right, or is it Korea? It's one of those two. If the guy hits a home run and he flips the bat, that's part of the showmanship for the crowd. But if you're in Major League Baseball in America and you hit a home run and flip the bat, you or your teammate's going to get drilled in the ear hole real soon.
And, Not really anymore. They allow it, but, yeah, up until a couple of years ago. Yeah,
well, you know what
right.
I mean, though. It's all, is it the showmanship to enjoy the moment and celebrate and put on a little show for the crowd, like, you know, the WWF or whatever? Or are you, you know, going in front of the Utah sideline and making throat-slashing gestures and, this kind of thing?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
That's what you're trying to prevent. You want sportsmanship, but, you know. Anyways, we're kind of dissecting something that's a little bit off the topic of winning and being 10-0, but.
Yeah, well, we're Dugan 10-0. We're thrilled. We're happy.
Let's tackle the questions, shall we, unless you have something more you want to add.
I was going to go. Well, I got a couple things throughout college football. Jimbo got fired. Got fired from A&M.
Texas A&M.
After a win, that's where they throttled was it Arkansas or who'd they beat? I can't remember.
That sounds right. I think
Mississippi State.
Mississippi State. He gets fired. They got to pay him off $76 million.
Wow.
He signed a 10-year, $95 million extension after the COVID year. The COVID year, which hosed a lot of teams. Like, a lot of teams got money happy after that COVID year. I mean, they finished number four and won the Orange Bowl in 2020, which only included – you know, the SEC basically was the only conference playing that year.
Big Ten did.
They played six games.
I think somebody went 9-2 in the Big Ten.
I disagree. Anyways, they're only going to play a four game season. Remember, they got together with the Pac-12 and they were going to play four-game season. And then they renegotiated and because they said, no, you got to play six to get into the playoffs. And they did it for Ohio State so they could get into the playoffs. And then the Pac-12 was on the side of science, take it to the tug. And we decided to not play, not have mass casualties on the field, which – never happened. Ticket to the tug.
The medical tent filled with COVID victims.
They're already
Ohio. You're right. Ohio State was 7-1.
Yeah, because of the college football playoff, they went 6-0 and then made it to the championship.
Indiana was 6-2. Penn State was
4-5.
Where
are we going here?
Just now, the COVID year really muddied things up for a lot of teams, you know. Anyways, so they're already throwing out names, you know, Kalen DeBoer and Dan Lanning are being thrown out for Texas A&M, and I wouldn't if I were. I don't know, maybe Lanning wants to go back to the South, but if I were any of those guys, I'd stay away from Texas A&M. It seems like Texas A&M can never get things right. You know, they're kind of like a Detroit Lions or a Cleveland Browns, you know, kind of a team.
Well, they don't go 2-10 every year though, but. I kind of know what you're getting at, but
they're just, they never, well, maybe they're like a Mariners
They're like an Atlanta Falcons. They're more like a Carolina Panthers or Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there you
willing
go.
To spend the money, but they rarely do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know if I'd go there. There's just sometimes there's just teams that just have a real stain to them. They just can't get it. It doesn't matter who's in management or whatever. So I wouldn't, if I were any of those, I'd stay the fuck away from that job. But Jaden Daniels breaks Tui's, record kind of a thing. He did a Tui yesterday, but he had more yards and more touchdowns. So it's a little sad, but hell of a game by that guy. You know, I don't know if you guys caught that.
Say that last part again.
Well, so Jaden Daniels had a 300 passing and a 200 rushing performance yesterday, and I think both amounts were more than what Tui had. So,
that's the first time I've heard of that. That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah, that was yesterday. So, yeah, he had 350 yards passing, he's the first quarter, but he had 606 total yards. He's the first quarterback ever to have over 350 passing and over 200 rushing. So,
and this is where we find out that the defensive coordinator was Kent Bear.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for Florida. Yeah, yeah, he had 372 in the air and 234 on the ground. So, I mean,
I'm looking at it now. Wow, on 12 carries.
Hell of a – yeah. Every time we looked up, we had that game on the TV on the way home in the bus. And every time we looked up, it was like Jaden Daniels was running loose just down the middle of the field, it felt like. It's like for a 59-yard touchdown or something. It's like, wow, this guy is really putting on a show here.
It says here he also had an 85-yard touchdown run.
Yeah.
So, well, this is on. Continue. Where are we going?
Willie wants to wrap this up before 2 p.m., I think, is what he's trying to say.
I'm usually the one that wants to wrap. What's your guys' definition of drub?
Well, I know where you're going. I didn't see the USC Oregon game. And I know that they're saying, but you know, we like the 1987 Arizona State game, the Huskies won 27-14. We drubbed them, but is 13 points a drubbing? You know, it depends
exactly
on the context. But we
exactly
beat them physically that game.
Yeah.
So it just depends on the context.
Yeah. I read the headline from ESPN. It was like, it's like you're going to open up this article thinking the Ducks shut him out. That game wasn't in doubt for me watching. You know, I didn't think USC was going to win, but USC had a chance late, and their poor coaching Lincoln Riley going for two when he was down nine. Like, he could have gone for one, and then they don't have to onside. They don't have to onside kick it with 4 minutes left in the game. You know, they could have kicked it off because they still had timeouts to stop them. Anyways, get to the question so Willie Duke can stop complaining.
I was just making jokes.
I want you to go. Leave Joey alone. Go after Willie this week.
I fucking love football. I love football.
I
fucking talk about football all day.
I'll keep it going. And one of my things of like those types of people with these fucking narratives that love the analytics and stuff like that, that reminded me when I was finally about getting off of Twitter with the Pac-12 fake shitty Wilner stuff of, there was a couple of those guys who were like Pac-12 analytics guys. And I had put like in my QB rankings that like Jaden Daniels and DTR were like ahead of Kadon Slovis and some other guy like that. And these guys went,
including one, I think, was George Reister, who's like a former Oregon player. Like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, just went ballistic on me for suggesting. I'm like, yeah, I watch games. Like, Jaden Daniels and DTR are better than those guys. And Kadon Slovis throws to Amon-Ra St. Brown and Michael Pittman. Like, that makes a difference. And those guys were, like, screaming at me. And eventually I was just like, fine, whatever. I'm like, hey, whoever you guys are out there, football isn't just like your stupid fucking PFF models and stuff like that. Like, there's some guys are better football players than others, including those two guys are 10 times better than fucking Kadon Slovis. Thank you.
Which way are we going with this, Willie?
Yeah.
Which way are we going?
No, I'm just saying. Well, I'm joking. I'm just trying to be an
ass. The analytics dorks that love Oregon and stuff like that, too, they just love this analytics models and stuff like that, but it's like...
The metrics,
it's like, that's not fucking football for them. Like, yeah, it has some points, but, like, watch the games and don't give me the eye test shit. I don't think these eye test people are even watching the Washington games or the Oregon games. I think they're on Twitter and looking at scores. Because I watched Oregon the most I have last night. It's kind of like last year. I mean, like, I think they're better than last year, but it was like, yeah, their pass defense, like, Caleb Williams missed, like, he constantly had guys running for touchdowns, and he just missed them. Like, they easily could have put up a lot of points and made that a hell of a game. And congratulations, Oregon. You fumbled from the inside your own end zone, and you gained 2 yards on it. You really drubbed those guys.
And by the way, I said metrics, but I think that was the wrong word, because what was it that Here to Beat My Chest used to always cite? There was another word. He would always have...
Models?
No,
they like the models, yeah.
There was another word. Someone will know, and they'll post it, but he used to always cite it. What's that?
The metrics?
Well, that's the word I used, but it didn't seem quite right. Oh. I don't want to get caught on go down another rabbit hole or whatever. But anyways, he would post a wall of numbers and text and everything saying, would all you have to do is just look at the game and cite about three plays, and that would summarize it. But he would want to do a big long thing on why what we saw wasn't the real reality, and here's the real reality. And I'm forgetting the word. Anyways, it doesn't matter. So let's see here. Dirty South Dog says, what will it take for DeBoner to fire his defensive staff? Will it even matter with A&M about to sign him? None of us think that A&M is going to sign DeBoner, and he's not going anywhere. I really believe that. I don't feel like I'm duging.
I think Willie Duke's Twitter guy said they're working on a extension, so.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Everything just seems aligned. DeBoer had a huge, huge say in bringing in Dannon, and so I just don't think that you just walk away from something like that when you're obviously building the nest up here, or whatever analogy you want to use or metaphor. So, Willinder, is this the worst 10-0 Husky team of your lifetimes? Yes. Because there's only been two of them.
Yeah, there's only two, yeah.
And the other one was the best team I've ever seen. So, Husky fan in BC, a Canuck. And he has a couple of posts here with questions, or actually a question and a comment. What's your best guess for – what's that?
We brought him up at the get-together.
I know we did.
We did.
And then we started talking about Jordan Chin. No relation there, but
no relation.
What's your best guess for who will be next year's Jack Westover? With Culp obviously leaving, I think the three of us like Cuevas, right?
Oh yeah, well, yeah. I want Cuevas to get the ball more.
Yeah,
there was twice I pointed out the Nacho Man. I was like, Cuevas in the slot. Cuevas in the slot. Let's hit Cuevas. Come on. You know, I just wanted to see him catch a pass because he's pretty athletic running with the ball. So
Very.
I don't know. Maybe Quentin Moore gets a couple more catches next year. I don't know. You forget like Ryan Auten's on the team.
Yeah, you know, I don't think like he's played at all. Yeah, it's interesting. This guy they got, Decker DeGraff, who's coming in as a true freshman next year, puts up like video game numbers as a tight end in like Southern California. He might. He's kind of like a shorter.
So did Jake Browning.
Well, tight end is different than quarterback.
I know. thank you. Didn't know that.
Yeah. No, I know high school numbers. High school numbers aren't necessarily a prediction for anything, but yeah, I also
shout out to Tequila.
You could see a transfer. So yeah, who knows?
Huge shout out to Jack Westover. I don't know if you guys got to see a replay because you were there live, but if you saw a slow motion of his catch on fourth down, spectacular.
I completely forgot about that play.
Yeah, great play. Yeah, big time.
Two
big time fourth down catches this year.
I mean, big time athleticism catch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is a strange comparison maybe, but almost like a Jerome Payton in just in terms of he's built differently, but just in terms of the athleticism and the style in which he twisted his body and contorted his body in midair to reach out and snare that ball. It was just fantastic. And then Husky Fan in BC says, and this is not a question but an observation, at this point, it seems fairly likely that Jalen McMillan will return next year. It also seems like UW is strategizing to make this Giles Jackson redshirt year so as to bring him back next year. He didn't play last night. So that would make next year's receiving core look pretty damn good. Second or third best receiving core on paper after only this year's group and maybe the 2016 Ross Pettis combo. And he lists McMillan, Bernard, Jackson, Boston. And yeah, I fully agree.
Yeah. Yeah, because
optimism
assuming
for the future.
Odunze's gone. I mean, if you're Jalen Polk, man, you could. I already see him in top 75 lists now, so he could easily be a second rounder.
Maybe a late first rounder, even.
Maybe a,
his hands
I,
are so,
you know.
His hands are so strong with the way they play in the NFL now with the passing offenses. Like I would absolutely,
yeah.
If he was in the second round, I mean, I'm trying to think of, including Odunze, like a Husky guy with consistently that strong of hands. It's just he makes these catches, and you're like, there's no way he's going to hang on to that. And then you look, and you watch the replay, and he's, like, twisted up with a guy interfering with him, by the way. And then he still catches it with, like, his arms ripped around the guy.
Yeah.
And the guy swatting at the ball, and you're just like, geez, I've never seen hands that strong.
Yeah, their hands are insane.
Yeah.
The whole receiving core.
And Polk is just built like, I don't know, I was going to say thick, but that makes him sound like he's overweight or something maybe, or like a lineman.
No,
he walked by us.
He walked by us last night. We were, you know, we saw several players walk by us, you know, after the game. And, yeah, we were stoked. We were cheering him up. But Polk was the last one we saw right before we left. And, yeah, I mean, he looks like an NFL receiver, you know.
And I'd have to go back and look at last year. But he looks maybe a good 10, 12 pounds bigger this year, at least based on my memory, you know. So,
yeah, so does Odunze. They did a good job of they did a good job in the weight room, both of them off-season, and then they don't seem to lose any speed. But, yeah, no, that's a good point.
Grundle Stiltskin says, since it's established that DeBoer makes awful assistant coaching hiring decisions, do you expect that the new AD will really instruct changes be made or assume full control over the firing and hiring process? Willie Duke.
why are you passing this one on to me?
I was just trying to make it sound like that John McLaughlin guy from the old firing line or whatever.
Answer that question.
The good part is the hard part is I don't have much of a take on that.
You guys all want coaches to be fired. He's not firing any coaches.
We don't know that 100%. I would be surprised.
I'd be shocked if he fires college coaches. They don't like to turf their own guys. They carry their guys with them, and they stick with them. They don't. No coach left behind. I think Brock Huer said on Coward's show, like after the Husky Oregon game, he was talking about somebody else, but. They were just talking about firing coaches or something like that. And he says, you know how many guys Jimbo Fisher's fired in both of his, you know, both places? It's one guy he's let go. One guy in, like, you know, 20 years Jimbo Fisher's been coaching or whatever. And he's let go one guy. Like, the college coaches do not – you know, guys will go to another place for a better opportunity, you know, like a promotion, but they don't let go of people. They stick with their guys, which probably ends up costing them jobs, you know, but I think here's what you got to look for. Yeah, that's a buyout. Cal gave him a weird extension a couple of years ago. So that's a buyout Cal has to come up with money for a program that's, you know, in debt. So I don't know. We can hope for that, but look, Indiana's going to fire Tom Allen. And as I predicted earlier, they're going to go for Ryan Grubb. They're going to try to hire Ryan Grubb. I thought that before the year. I thought that Tom Allen sucks, and he's going to get fired. It's like his sixth or seventh year there. They kept Tom Allen instead of promoting Kalen DeBoer. They fucked that up. And so I think Ryan Grubb's going to take that job, which would be a massive – they'll pay him $4 or $5 million a year at Indiana. He's got great facilities. Hugh Millen said, you know, every Big Ten school has better facilities than, you know, even Oregon. That's what he said.
Wow.
So, yeah, he said Indiana's got better, you know, better facilities than Oregon because his son,
Carol,
you know,
James
was on a recruiting trip.
So Carol James told me about 4 years ago when Gary Pinkel was at Missouri right before he left, that she saw his facilities there, and they were like jaw dropping. That was Missouri. I know that's SEC.
Yeah. Well, that's what the arms race is. You know, when your competition is Cal, and you know. When your competition's Cal and the Beavers and the Cougars, you know, what's your, you know, hey, we just got to be better than them. You know, you need
even
better
USC.
Competition to step it up. Yeah.
Terrible.
USC, yeah. I mean,
or at least
you know, UCLA plays in a stadium that's across town. You know, there's just, Pac-12 has just created so many – that's a whole nother podcast. Anyways, so here's what you guys can hope for. If you guys really want to just start turfing coaches, Ryan Grubb – I think Ryan Grubb's going to take the Indiana job. Whenever they fire Tom Allen, which they should fire him today because that program's dead, who is Ryan Grubb going to take with him? He's probably not going to take who's the tight end coach? Nick Sheridan? Is that the tight end coach?
I don't know.
So he used to be the offensive coordinator at Indiana, and they let him go. That's so he came over here with DeBoer, and I think that DeBoer, they're not going to take him back as the offensive coordinator. So what we'd have to worry about is Jamarcus Shepherd. Would he take the offensive coordinator job, go with Ryan Grubb over to Indiana, or can we entice him to stay here and be the offensive coordinator here? I don't know if he's meant to be an offensive coordinator, but that would be my hope, you know. And then they're not going to take William Inge, because William Inge was already defensive coordinator at Indiana, and you know, I don't think they were happy with the results he produced there. So would Ryan Grubb somehow convince, you know, Chuck Morrell to go with him? I don't think we're going to see a lot of coaching changes. That's what I'm getting at.
No, I hear you, and we'll see. And you know, we need to see how the season ends, because if the defense continues to play the frustrating way that they play, and this team ends up going 13-1 or something, how can you complain still, you know? I don't know, but let's also, we've been potting for about an hour 20 now, and this is, you know, usually around the 65-minute mark is when people start to drop off, so we still got a ton of questions, so let's see if we can hammer them out in the next 15 minutes or so. Bananas the Blonde said, since the Oregon game, this team has found new and creative ways to allow the opponents to stay within striking distance rather than putting them away. We've gone from the simple, baffling play call and drive extending penalty to fumbling in the end zone to throwing interceptions in the end zone. This weekend, we threw in a new wrinkle by dropping a pick six at the 1 yard line. When that didn't work, our quarterback ran backwards 10 yards on third down and goal, followed by the kicker kicking the chip shot field goal 3 feet off the ground. How do we up the ante in the next couple of weeks? P.S. My donation to the site will be on the way soon. I'm having trouble getting a hold of my Western Union guy. Okay. Everybody's got a Western Union guy. So his was, to me, that's just a cleverly worded joke. There's really nothing to say there, right? Unless you guys have something to say. Okay. Fire Cohen with another profound post on Hardcore Husky. How many of 89 Utes wives made it to the Hardcore Husky get-together? And then I posted something that I thought was pretty funny, and then it only got one upvote, so go figure. Lone Star Dog. Neuheisel popped off and won a Rose Bowl in year two, then slowly descended into mediocrity. What needs to exist in the program to give you confidence that this will be sustained year in and year out after Penix and the wide receivers are gone? And I would say you just look at the past's prologue. I don't know that we have the talent sitting there right now, and at the same time you look at what DeBoer has done over a fairly long period of time now, regardless of what level he's at, and he's had sustained success. So it's one of those things where you don't know exactly what the cook did to make this lasagna taste so good, but they obviously know what they're doing. How's that for an
analogy? I mean, yeah, there was a thing too with Neuheisel where if you looked at him at Colorado, he started really good too with the previous coach's players. Then they had like a bad. He kind of. I'll look it up now, but there were signs.
I think he was 5-6.
Yeah, he had a bad year. Maybe he had like a bad year or two. There were signs which haven't. DeBoer hasn't played. Yeah, he won 10 games in his first two seasons. Then he went 5-6 and 8-4. Like once.
There you go.
He was a guy who. Yeah, and then at UCLA, he kind of had a similar but not as intense thing. But, yeah, he whereas DeBoer, at least at lower levels, you know, it appears that he knows how to maintain it.
The HB has something here where he's posting what I consider to be a ridiculous tweet from Pete. I don't know how you say his name, Thamel, whatever. And he just said early early list of potential names for Texas A&M, knowing money is no object, and he's just basically throwing every big name out there, but it's obvious he's not rooted in anything. And
not rooted in substance.
Right. For God's sake, I don't know about this one guy. Anyways, moving on.
Maybe Ryan Grubb. Maybe Ryan Grubb. I'm not kidding. They interviewed him last year for the offensive coordinator job. And he probably went there and didn't get a good feel. Like is Jimbo Fisher going to let me run the offense, or is he going to,
if you're a booster that is helping to pay off $76 million payout or whatever, are you going to want to go to an unproven coordinator? They're not going to settle for that. Duke DuJour, is this actually – no, it's in reference to that one post. Okay. Fire Cohen. Again, another profound comment. Every jackass program in the country wants Boner now. Thank you. Lone Star Dog says, who gets arrested for human trafficking first, Land Danning or Phil Knight? And I love how he changed that up to prevent lawsuits. That's a joke, so we'll pass that one. Fire the Janitor says, I've Googled, quote, Phil Knight, Jeffrey Epstein, end quote, more times than would be considered normal. Another joke. I posted a question there, but I'm actually not even going to, for the sake of time, I'm going to skip it. Okay, skipping that one. Duke DuJour says, I actually have a question regarding USC if you have time. How did everyone preseason get their predictions about them so wrong? I wouldn't be shocked if they lost to UCLA. And don't say it's Jen. Thank you, fellas. I'll echo what Joey said last week. Have you noticed ever since Jen Cohn arrived at USC that everything's just going downhill?
She's great, though, guys.
I mean, predicting what USC to
people love her.
Predicting USC to win the conference was dumb and lazy. I mean, it was pretty obvious that anyone should have picked Oregon or Washington and maybe throw Utah in there. It made no sense. And I put a couple things on the board and replies and stuff, but like they're not very good at receiver. And it feels pretty shitty for them. Like if they were just a little bit better at receiver and are a little bit better at defense, they'd be really good. But yeah, their receivers are super pedestrian. But that was just lazy sports writers and shit. Just like, oh yeah, USC. It's the same thing as like Texas being ranked ahead of Washington in preseason. It was like they played the last game of the year with the same players, same coaches.
And they were favored against us last year when they were ranked 20th and we were ranked 12th.
Mm-hmm. And if anything, Texas lost more players to graduation and early. Yeah, it's just the same lazy shit of dumb sports writers who are just like, USC or Texas.
USC. 110%
that shit. No one should have ever thought they'd be better than Washington or Oregon or Utah.
Sonny Shackelford with two questions here. Biggest takeaways from the Hardcore Husky get-together?
We should say who was there. If I could go, I'd go. Okay, Derek, Nacho, 89U, Jaworn Hooker showed up halfway through, and then you got Wooly Doug, me, Laocoon, and Purple Bays. Laocoon.
Oh, you did stop to pick up the knowledge from the tractor trailer or wherever he was going to be. What was it?
I kind of forgot.
Oh no!
It was never like he never reminded me, or I never saw that he was gonna
Sure. Well, okay. Nobody, he never DM'd me, so it was like, you know, I guess I just subconsciously assumed he was not going to, you know, come down there. So.
No, I mean, when you said, I kind of forgot that I immediately had this image of him standing by the road in the dusk as the countless parade of taillights go by, but there's no Joey Dangerously, you know.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But, okay. I like the knowledge, you know, when I'm just looking out for my pod. And Sonny yeah. Shackelford also says, best Cedro Woolley Christmas tree farm and festive traditions. Woolley!
I don't think there's a big tree farm.
There's a big Christmas tree put in the middle of an intersection on the main street downtown every year. It's lit up. It's pretty cool. Check it out if you're ever driving through. That's, other than that, I got nothing.
Yeah, and it creates a weird roundabout that people get confused by, even though they've lived here for 100 fucking years, and it's the same thing every year. Oh, what do we do? How do we drive around the tree? Oh, you... See that your car has a steering wheel, and you turn it which direction you'd like your vehicle to go. Yeah. Anyways,
sources says what percentage of resident ducks will commit seppuku if landing leaves for A&M? Oh, I don't know, 30 to 40%.
Well, he can leave, and you know, I'm sure whoever they promote will end up. Just fine or whatever. So
no, you know that, and I know that.
They'll run the same offense where they throw sideways all game, and they'll manage to put up 500 yards of offense, and no one will figure out how to stop it. And they'll continue. Defenses will continue to play 10 yards off the ball and allow them to do it.
Strangest
thing ever in the history of football.
They do run those kind of exotic stretch plays. I don't even know what they're called, but they're like a stretch play where they move everybody one direction. The running back goes the complete opposite way, and they pitch back. And those always seem to get 8 to 10 yards against normal teams and 15 to 20 yards against us. So
they, they run that shit well. I mean, the sideways pass shit, like, I'm always screaming at the stadium of like when the Huskies run it, cause it always goes for -4, but Oregon, the sideways shit always goes for like 8 to 9 yards. They do a good job of it. And yeah, I mean the Oregon, as I think I said in last podcast, like there's something there where it's like, it's a really easy place to have success as a coach. So it's just like Landy will leave and the next guy, with nothing really that makes sense of him being good, will have success. I mean, Mario Cristobal was winning fucking 10 plus games there every year, and he's a fucking clown. I don't get it.
And a douchebag.
Yeah, and a fucking fucking douchebag. Say fake. Yeah. So who knows?
He's a shit human.
Yeah. Same thing with offensive coordinator like Will Stein, Kenny Dillingham. Kenny Dillingham can't do. His offense can't score fucking 9 points at ASU. Like, it looks like shit. Bo Nix sucked. Was pretty fucking shitty at Auburn. Like, yeah, if I was them, I wouldn't worry about coaching.
Don't worry about it. Everything turns to gold. It's fine. You're fine.
Yeah,
let him go. They want to pay Jimbo's buyout and then Dan Lanning's buyout and then sign him to a new contract. More power to him. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll find some hard running back in the portal every year. I don't worry about it.
You know, you've always got an axe to grind with whoever they're running. Who was the guy, the short guy that you guys didn't like about 3 years ago, the Oregon Duck guy, and he would hold the ball with both hands? And
Travis Dye. Case in point, the guy was fucking poison. Like, I don't know. He fucking sucked, but he was, like, unstoppable. Then the Duck fans all shit on him, but I'm like, I don't know. You probably go look at his stats, and they're probably better than Buck Irving, if not at least comparable, and he was fucking clutch. Like, but then they fucking hate him. He seemed like a fucking...
No.
Pretty... I just feel like they. Yeah, I'm gonna stop there. I feel like they get.
Well, you hated him at the time. You hated him.
Oh, I still do. I don't get it. Like, it's just weird shit that only works there. It only works while you're there. It's just like, it's like a weird Billy thing.
If you ever play Madden or, you know, the NCAA football game and you just, the team kicked off to you and you just let the player just run, you don't move or anything in it, and the kickoff return goes like 30 or 40 yards, and it just, that was like Travis Dye. He'd get the handoff, he'd run straight, and nobody would be there to tackle him. And he'd just keep running straight. It was like, this guy doesn't make a lot of moves or anything. There's just some wide open lane that nobody's figured out to, you know, just stack the box against these fucking guys. It was weird. It's always weird with that guy.
They had him listed as 5'10". I don't remember him being 5'10".
He wasn't more like Miles. Miles Gaskin
like 5'7".
Yeah, Miles Gaskin listed like 5'10". He's not 5'10". No, that's just like it's a thing they.
Yeah.
A thing are like Jabbar Muhammad. Yeah. I think is listed at 5'10" too. It's like they won't list guys below 5'10" anymore. It's weird.
So anyways, let's wrap this up. Spoony Love, this is more for humor's sake, I think, but we'll go through it because they got six Chincredibles. Much like our beloved dog spreading the refuse of this garbage conference up and down the West Coast, I'm preparing to blow all the leaves from the other day's windstorm around the diameter of my property and depositing them on the street, lawns, and driveways of my neighbors. How might the playoff committee view this action when it comes to evaluating my candidacy for HOA president? All right. Last question, road trip. I'm skipping a couple here, but final question for our show today, and then we'll do a very quick peek at Oregon State. Boston doesn't seem as physical as Odunze yet. Bernard plays tough. If Matt can return to form, can this be a good unit? Well, yes, of course. Can they get bigger and more physical at DB? Look at Polk. Yes, they absolutely can. Your guys' thoughts on Oregon State? I think it's going to be an absolute bloodbath.
Yeah, I think they can win, but it's going to be tough. And, I mean, you look at a schedule and you're like, it's so hard to go undefeated, and you get down to this point and you're like, well, what game could they lose? And now you're this one looked like it going into the season, and it's the last road game, and it's like going to be the biggest game in their program's history. Like it's going to be pretty impressive if they can win. So I'm not scared, but like logistics and everything add up to this being a really hard game to win.
I agree 1,000%. Joey?
I think they're going to win. I think hopefully they get wise this week and they just say, you know, if Oregon State they're going to throw deep on us, then, you know, good for them. But they can't let Damian Martinez just run wild all night on them.
And by the way, that would be the
death of the Husky season is to let him, you know, go wild.
And even though Grubb pissed me off two or three times yesterday, I thought that overall he did a good job. He was really going to the tight ends. I thought he could have thrown to Dylan Johnson a little bit more coming out of the backfield. I know he wants Dylan Johnson back there perhaps to protect Penix, but you know, we're going to be seeing a lot of blitzing and pressure the rest of the way now. And I thought, you know, I don't have the final stats in front of me, but I think Westover had about 6 catches. I think Culp had 2. So I thought that was really good.
Yeah, and I think early on, we haven't mentioned it, but Penix was pretty greedy, like with taking deep shots when they had guys for like 10 yards over like a lot early on. They barely missed on some of the deep shots too. But yeah, I think Oregon State to me is going to be a lot like Utah. Like Utah's defense, I think, is better, but I think DJU's better than the pig fucker, and I think their offensive line's better. So yeah, and it's on the road, so I think it's going to be a similar game where if the Huskies play well, like nothing about Oregon State scares me, but you know, like in matchup wise, but if the Huskies play well, they should win. That's basically it.
All right, gentlemen, we'll reconvene a week from now.
Hell so, yeah.
Talk to you guys soon.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the Hardcore Husky Podcast. This show is copyrighted material. In other words, stop plagiarizing our shit, fuckos. So please tell a friend and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, especially you cheap bastards who don't donate. It's the least you could do. Yeah, I'm looking at you, creepy coog. And come join our fun over at hardcorehusky.com. We've got Husky Football, Yellow Snow's Record Shop, and our notorious Tug Tavern, which is a shit show of politics and strange news. And if you enjoy yourself and are ready for the next level of cyber
peyote,
come join Swain's Wigwam. I'm going to have to read this over.
Sway's Wigwam, yeah.
Sway's Wigwam at Navajo Nation's Gift to College Football. It's also the official private club of Hardcore Huskies. We're talking boobs, guns, and inside information, all for the low fee of $129 a year. Come join the fun. I have to redo that one, but...